From Latrobe to Lebanon, Martinsburg to Middletown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, special elections, an open seat on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, along with county, municipal, and school board races, will be on the ballot in 2023. Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting is here with details. Pennsylvania is about to get a new governor and a new legislature. What financial challenges will they face? We get the answer from Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi on the Allegheny Institute report. And Americans for Prosperity has honored those lawmakers at both the federal and state levels who have supported pro-growth policies. Ashley Klingensmith spotlights Pioneers for Prosperity on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. As we begin the new year, the annual increase in Pennsylvania turnpike tolls will kick in on January 8th. The 2023 increase in tolls will be 5% across the turnpike system. The hike includes both those who pay with EasyPass and those who pay toll by plate. EasyPass drivers pay significantly less than toll by plate motorists. Annual toll increases are expected in the foreseeable future as the turnpike struggles to pay debt incurred by legislatively mandated payments to PennDOT and local transit authorities. And more bad news for motorists, the state gas tax will rise about 3 cents per gallon. That means the state's already highest in the country gas tax will be set at over 61 cents per gallon. The tax on diesel fuel will rise from 74 cents per gallon to 78.5 cents per gallon. Gambling revenue continues its solid recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic, raking in $452.3 million in November. That is an increase of 4.5% over November of 2021. Revenue was strong in all sectors of the industry, but online gaming was particularly robust. The good news for taxpayers, $181.8 million from November's gaming revenues will be paid in taxes to state, county, and local governments. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. You might not have recovered yet from the high-profile midterm elections, but 2023 races have already begun, and there will be thousands of offices on the ballot across Penn's Woods this year. For a look at what voters will face, we turn to Chris Nicholas. Chris is a veteran political consultant with Eagle Consulting. He joins us now. Chris, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Chris, we have a new year and a new set of elections, and if voters thought that there was a crazy year last year, boy, the number of choices you're going to have to make this year are exponentially larger. We have a couple of special elections for House and Senate seats, only involving those districts, but what's going on particularly with the House?
There's right now, Loman, 4 special elections set up. One for the end of January in the Columbia, Montour, Northumberland part of the state, and then 3 as of right now in Allegheny County. And the 3 in Allegheny County are for Democrats, one who passed away, unfortunately, right before Election Day. One state rep got elected to Congress, so of course she'll resign from the House to go to the U.S. House. Another one out there, Austin Davis, he was elected lieutenant governor with Josh Shapiro, so he'll resign. And then the 4th one, the one up in Northumberland, that area, the longtime state senator there retired from public office to become the Senate parliamentarian, and so you have to fill that slot. And one of the reasons the House especially doesn't like special elections is they have to fill their own slots, and then when there are vacancies in the state Senate, like I just described, who does the state Senate normally look to fill a vacancy there? They look to the local state House members who are already elected and part of that. So it makes life for the House chamber even more difficult. So given the House right now has 3 vacancies, 101 Republicans and 99 Democrats, and the actual majority in the House, you need 102. It's going to be an interesting January and February.
As we look past the legislature and what's been occurring there, there will be some statewide races in 2023 here in Penns Woods. One of particular interest, an open seat on the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania.
Those are rare. So unfortunately, our sitting Chief Justice, Max Baer, passed away in the fall. But even if he had not passed, he was about to hit this year the mandatory retirement age of 75. So that's an open Democratic seat. The last two seats that have been up on the highest court in the land here were Democratic seats. So this is now a chance for the GOP to try to advance their number of members in the Supreme Court. Right now there's four Democrats, two Republicans in that one vacancy. So one of the first things we expect from the new Shapiro administration is to appoint the temporary Supreme Court justice to fill out the rest of Max Baer's term here in 2023 so the court gets back to its full complement of seven. So then we'll have a statewide Supreme Court seat. As we've talked in the past, Loman, that gets the most interest both here in the state and outside the state. And then we will have two openings on the state Superior Court and one opening on the state Commonwealth Court. So expect those races to, as usual, not get quite as much attention as the Supreme Court race.
And we have those races which will be voted on by everyone who's a registered voter in Pennsylvania. But also, this is a year where we're going to have a whole lot of county and local races. Let's start at the county level. What do we have up?
Well, this is the quote-unquote on year of the off years, right? So the slowest year in our four-year cycle is the year after the presidential race. That would have been 2021. And now in 2023, it's a lot more action in this quote-unquote off year because we will elect some county judges. Every county will elect their commissioners. There are some counties that have opted for what's called home rule, so they don't have three commissioners. They have a mayor in Philadelphia, and that's up. They have a county executive in Allegheny County, and that seat is also up. And then you'll also be electing some of your row officers, your register of wills, your recorder of deeds, some district attorneys. So there'll be more action this year at your county level than we saw 2 years ago. And you and I have talked about this for years, that most people have a lot more interaction with their municipal and county leaders than they ever do with, say, their member of Congress or perhaps their U.S. senator. Those levels of government hit your local daily life more so than the big national ones. So those races being in smaller districts, the counties, and being closer to the people and less money, there's more shoe leather. So you'll have a chance to meet your county commissioner candidates in most counties if you put your mind to it, because those campaigns will not be dominated by 4 or 5 weeks of heavy TV advertising. That just doesn't happen in your average county commissioner race. And just to remind everybody, most of the counties in the state of our 67 are county commissioners still, and those folks are a combination of executive and legal and legislative. And the way it works is, Loman, each party runs two people. So the Democrats put up two people for county commissioner, as do the Republicans, and then the top three win. So there's no big, as I call it, strategery in the county commissioner races. It's just a race not to finish last.
Well, you did mention that there are county executive races in some counties, particularly Allegheny County. And in Allegheny County and in Philadelphia, where there is a mayoral race, there's going to be change here, even though they're very heavily Democrat.
The two-term Democratic mayor in Philadelphia, Jim Kenney, is leaving. The Allegheny County executive kind of strangely has a three-term limit, so his 12 years are up. So you're going to have, I think, very difficult, very fractious Democratic primaries. Both those counties are, especially Philadelphia, overwhelmingly Democratic in party registration. And just a little side note here, of our 67 counties, Philadelphia is the one that is both a city and a county. So if you hear us interchangeably refer to Philadelphia as a county and a city, we're not making mistakes. We may make some other ones. But that's not a mistake. That's just kind of a quirk in our system of labeling counties. So the Democratic voters there will have quite a busy January through May when our primary is, trying to pick through those sets of candidates, because it's no secret with so many Democrats in those two counties, the election for most parts is decided in the May primary.
All across Pennsylvania, we have literally thousands of municipal governments, townships, boroughs, cities, lots of races in those areas as well.
Well, you'll have some mayoral races. You'll have some township supervisor, township commissioners. The other elections that I think will get even more play than that are school boards. Most school boards have 7 or 9 members. They're not all up in the same year. They kind of get a couple every year. We saw in 2021 a rising interest in school board races, a lot more spending, a lot more vitriol in those races. And I think all three of those will continue here in 2023. You're kind of having a battle between who are the schools put together for. In one side, you have people who think, well, it's primarily to educate students. There's another group of people who say kind of, no, it's primarily for the teachers and the administrators that are in there. We keep hearing, in my mind, horror stories about totally inappropriate curriculum for the particular age group of the children. So that started to get hot and heavy late in 2021. I think both sides have dug in and are ready for an even bigger battle. So for those of you, well, all of us in Pennsylvania, there's 501 school districts. 500 of them are operational. That other one doesn't have any schools. They just send their kids to the nearby school. So you're going to have 500 sets of school board races. And it's been my experience, Lohman, that school board races are only one of two things. They're either sleepers or they're totally crazy. So I think this year we're going to have a lot more of them that are totally crazy than sleepers.
We will, of course, keep an eye on all of this as 2023 progresses. We have been talking with Chris Nicholas, a veteran political consultant with Eagle Consulting. Chris, where can folks go if they want to get in touch with you?
Well, if they want even more of me, Lohman, a couple of things. They can visit my website at eagleconsult.com. I'm on Twitter at Eagle63. I appear pretty much every week as the Republican analyst on the only statewide public affairs show on state politics in Pennsylvania called This Week in Pennsylvania. You can, as they say, check your local listings, Lohman, to see when we're on Sundays across the state.
Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. Chris, Happy New Year.
Same to you, Lohman. Thank you.
Governor-elect Josh Shapiro and the new session of the state legislature are set to begin work and will face a complex set of fiscal issues. To learn more, we turn to Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi with this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. We want to wish all of our listeners a happy holiday season. Best wishes for 2023. And on that note, Frank, your most recent brief looks at what the next governor, who will be sworn in shortly into 2023, and the legislature, which will be seated also in early 2023, will be facing in terms of fiscal issues. Your brief looks at where things are with the general fund revenue. Could you give our listeners an idea of where things stand about halfway through this fiscal year?
Absolutely. When you think of the budget, of course, the general fund is what comes to most people's mind, and the general fund revenues are trending higher this year than they were last year. Now, I will admit that I looked at it on a calendar year basis. So I looked at it from January through October, the most recent date available in 2022, and compared it to calendar 2021. But they do operate on a fiscal year, but regardless, the months are still running ahead of each other. So it doesn't matter. So far, 2022 is turning out to be much better than 2021 on a calendar year basis, and fiscal 22-23 is turning out to be better than fiscal 21-22. So either way, how you slice it, we still have more money coming in. And so the question came up, well, why? And the obvious answer is, well, there's an inflationary economy out there nationally that has reached down to the state level. For example, when you look at the total general fund revenues through October, we're at $38.5 billion. This time last year, October, it was $33.9 billion. So you're about $5 billion difference. I'm projecting calendar year 2022 to hit $46.2 billion. In 2021, it was only $44.4 billion. So we're talking about an increase. You know, so you look at that and you think, okay, the incoming governor, the incoming legislature, they got some money to play with. Well, again, you talk about the inflationary pressures and you realize the largest tax revenue component of the general fund is a personal income tax. And it's like 35% of the general fund. And I'm thinking it's going to come in somewhere around $18.5 billion by the end of the fiscal year. In 2021, it was only $16 billion. So you can see that, again, it's running ahead. Now, what inflation does is not only does it raise the price of goods and services, but it tends to raise the wages because, especially in this economy with worker shortages, the workers who are in the labor force are finding themselves earning more wages because of the competition with jobs and also because a price of labor is part of the inflationary process. So they're getting more money to compensate them, their employer chooses to do so, cover the inflationary processes that they're facing as well. So you're seeing a lot of cost of living adjustments. So you're seeing these higher wages that, of course, the state's getting the income tax from. You're seeing that come through. The sales and use tax is the obvious one. When you're talking inflation, price of goods is going up. Well, the sales tax is based on the value of the price of the good or services that you're purchasing. In Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, that's 6%. In some counties, it's as high as 7%. But that's more money coming into the state coffers. The sales and use tax is about 30% of the general fund taxes. So you're seeing the inflationary pressures filling in the coffers of the general fund for the state. Now, one thing to keep in mind is this is not all free money. In as much as the state, when they buy stuff, it's also being hit by inflationary pressure. So the price of goods and services for something as simple as road salt or computer cartridges or desks or tables, whatever the government needs to buy, is also going up. So it's not like they're sitting on this big pile of money that they have nothing to do with. Now, the last one that you want to talk about, of course, is the corporate net income tax. And what's interesting there is it's currently sitting at 9.99%, but given the change of the legislation in 2022, it'll change in 2023 to 8.99%, to which it'll then fizzle out at 4.99% by 2031. Inflation's really causing the government coffers to fill up a little bit at this juncture, and it's probably going to be that way for quite a little bit going forward.
So you're pointing out there that, you know, what could happen then with the corporate net income tax is because they're facing the same type of inflationary pressures, they might end up paying more to Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. but then you're going to have this rate drop, which presumably is done in order to get more corporations to come here. So you may have more corporations that file the tax and then the revenues go up because you have more activity. So I guess that's a bit to unbundle as the numbers come in as you go forward.
And that's exactly it. You know, we're going to have to keep an eye on this, and we will. It's, you know, certainly what we do. But there's, again, even with the businesses, while they're getting more money from sales and uses, they're also paying more money for the products that they need to buy, their raw materials and resources, and the wages for the employees that they have. Again, you want to keep them happy, you're going to have to come up with some kind of cost of living increase so that the employees can at least purchase the same amount of real goods and services that they did in 2021 as they did in 2022. There's a lot of unbundling here that needs to be done. When you look at the nominal, it looks a lot better than probably what's going on at the real level. Now, we then segment into this notion of, well, what's going to happen going forward? The Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion conducts a business climate survey every spring and fall. And one of the questions they ask, and this year was the first question, is what do you think the current state of the economy happens to be? The top vote getter, and again, you could pick more than one, so you can't just go by percentages, happen to be inflation and rising costs amongst these businesses, these decision makers amongst these businesses, followed by current economic conditions and current and concerned over future economic conditions. So the business community is kind of taking a bit of a wait and see attitude, like, this isn't good. Will it get better in the future or not? So then that's one of the other questions is, do you think it's going to get any better? Respondents, when they asked that question, said the fall business climate, only 20% of them claimed it was better than in the spring. And looking ahead to next spring, they think that only 23% believe that it will in fact improve, while 35% believe that it'll get worse. So amongst the business community, you have some trepidation about whether or not this is going to get better. When asked about the general employment levels, it was interesting because it was the same answer. 51% of respondents claimed that employment levels in the fall were the same as they were 6 months ago, and 51.7% believe it'll remain 6 months from now. So they're not looking at adding to their payrolls in, too quickly. And I guess a large part of that has to do with finding qualified workers. And another question from that survey also asked the question of, how hard is it? And almost two-thirds of them said it's either some difficulty or a very difficult to get qualified workers into their factories or businesses, et cetera. And they think that going forward as well. So it's not a lot of optimism amongst the business community going forward, dealing with these inflationary costs, dealing with the inability to get qualified workers in there. They know that they've got to increase prices. They've got to increase wages and benefits going forward. While it looks good on top, policymakers, the new governor, the new legislator, they've got to keep a wary eye on it. You just can't start spending. If anything, you still need to look to where you can cut and grow this economy. And like we said multiple times before, and it's unlikely to happen, but the right to work law needs to be revisited. Eliminating a prevailing wage law, preventing public school teachers and transit workers from striking. These are things that will streamline government, make it more efficient, and make it more cost effective, so that when this inflationary bubble bursts and when a recessionary period shows up, whenever that may be, we'll be better able to handle it. We'll position ourselves better nationally as a good economic destination for business.
Great stuff, Frank, as always. And so we invite our listeners to please visit our website, www.AlleghenyInstitute.org. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi. This has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Pioneers for prosperity are those lawmakers, both in Washington and Harrisburg, who have championed pro-growth policies. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, tells us who they are on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
As we near the end of the 117th Congress and we've closed the 2021-2022 legislative session in Harrisburg, we can and should reflect on what elected members have served us well, and for those returning to Washington and Harrisburg, encourage them to continue their focus in 2023 in order to get Pennsylvania and America back on the path to prosperity. As constituents of our two United States Senators, our one Member of Congress, our State Senator, and state representative, we have a sphere of influence over five policymakers in their respective legislative branches. At Americans for Prosperity as a year-round organization with a permanent grassroots infrastructure, we prioritize accountability on a regular basis throughout the life cycle of a given session. It's so vitally important for members to know where they're voting well and where there's room for improvement. Our scorecards are incredibly valuable tools for communicating these strides and missteps so members can stay on course or course correct. Our Pennsylvania State Chapter of Americans for Prosperity releases both a mid-session and full-session scorecard for the General Assembly. Stay tuned for that release the first week of the new year, as we'll recognize those members of the State House and Senate who had the highest voting record on the 42 total bills we scored. For the first time in our organization's history, we launched congressional awards with 73 total recipients between the House and Senate. The Pioneer for Prosperity title was given to policy champions who have been on the front lines of opposing bad ideas and proactively advancing principles and policies that offer solutions to Americans facing barriers to their upward mobility and success. These individuals, just like our champions at the state level, go beyond a good voting record. They build winning coalitions, advocate passionately for their principles, and do what's right even when it's politically difficult. We took into account the relationship between the members' staff on the Hill and our Arlington, Virginia-based government affairs staff, as well as the district office and state chapter staff, and we looked at the willingness to interact with the grassroots to advocate for free market policy in a way that expands our movement nationwide. From the Pennsylvania delegation, we honored Senator Toomey and Representatives Keller, Muser, and Perry. The common thread between champions in Harrisburg and Washington is their commitment to standing strong for greater economic freedom. This Congress, that meant opposing the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the Corporate Welfare CHIPS Act, and the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. In Harrisburg, those members who stood and demanded a vote on the Taxpayer Protection Act and signaled a willingness to challenge the status quo and strive for a shot at passing transformative budgeting reform received some of the highest marks in Harrisburg. In the examples above, we saw votes that reflected prioritization of alleviating the economic anxiety so many of us feel. Their votes also stretched across critical issues around increasing domestic energy production and opposing the threats Harrisburg is posing, such as the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and expanding choices in healthcare and promoting flexibility for workers. As scores of new members descend on D.C. and Harrisburg on January 3rd, it's up to each of us to continue to push members outside of their comfort zones and recognize them when they vote and act accordingly. Problems of significant magnitude face Pennsylvanians, and for the first time in over a decade, we'll see a divided Harrisburg, with Democrats controlling the House and Republicans controlling the Senate. Of course, in Washington, we have the reverse in the chambers, but the same partisan divide. Encouraging bold action from the incoming Congress and legislature will be paramount, and with your help, we can continue to recognize those men and women standing on principle and hold those to account who are leaving potential on the table. To you and yours, we wish you a prosperous and happy new year. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. You can find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP, and you can follow us on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WBFD-AM in Bedford, WHKS-FM in Bloomsburg, along with WFRM-AM in Countersport, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.